Welcome back to Nach Yomi. This is Rabbi Yaakov Trump speaking. We are going to be learning the 22nd Perek of Sefer Yehoshua today. To me, this is one of the most fascinating and interesting narratives that occur in all the book of Sefer Yehoshua. And it is lesser known because it's well after all the division of the land and most people have given up at this point. So let's give a full focus to this. This Perek tells a story which resonates with all of us in so many ways. And that is like the challenges of a strong union. How can you have a country which has many states, which each have their own identity, yet there's one federal government, that they all have an allegiance to one flag, they can all operate independently yet under one constitution? That's the question which is at hand, and it is a question which has plagued nations for years and centuries. We start off with the following story. After the entire Chalukah has been done for the land of Israel, Yehoshua then talks to his the army forces of Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menashe. Remember, they had made a condition with Moshe Rabbeinu and agreed to Yehoshua that they're only going to get their land on the east side of the Jordan after they have conquered and divided the land. The land has now been conquered. The land has been divided. It's been a 14-year period. And they diligently stayed the entire time to finish that through. And Yehoshua now says, it is your turn to go back to the Transjordan. You can settle in your lands. And he sends Chatzi Shevet Menashe over with them to the lands on the east bank of the Jordan. They settle down. And Yehoshua concludes with a charge where he says, just remember, you need to follow Hashem and serve Hashem with all your hearts. And then he gives them a bracha and he sends them off. The problem is the first thing they do is they turn around and on the east bank of the Jordan, they make a huge mizbech, a huge altar, which creates great consternation. All of Israel realize what's going on. They see this and they gather to Shiloh, which is, of course, the place where the Mishkan is, in order to create war. This is going to be the first civil war in Jewish history, where they're going to march across eastwards to probably kill those who were the perpetrators of creating this altar, whether they think that they're going to be serving Avodah Zarah there, whether they think they're going to be serving Hashem with their own shrine, not the Mishkan. They are completely up in arms. But before doing anything, they send a delegation led by none other than Pinchas, the son of Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen, who we've met in the Torah, who leads a delegation of 10 tribes, or 10 representatives, to the East Bank and asks them and said, look, you know, what are you doing? What exactly are you trying to do? We've seen what collective punishment means. We've seen what happens in Baal Peor, in the desert, when some of Israel served Avodah Zarah through the daughters of Midian and Moab. What happened and how it affected everybody. We still haven't got through that till today. We saw in our own times, at the time, this is also their own times, but more recently, Achon, who took from the Cherem, who took from the spoils of Jericho, and everybody was punished. It wasn't just him. So why are you doing this? You're going to hurt everybody else. We can't just let this slide. And so they respond. The people on the East Bank say, no, chas v'shalom, we weren't doing it for this. They say in very clear words, Kel Elokim Hashem, God is the only power in the world. We're not trying to do anything. We're not trying to create our own worship. We're not going to try to create our own shrine or our own polytheism. I'll tell you why we're doing this. For a very simple reason. We live with a large barrier between the two parts of the land. There's a river. So you know what? Our children are going to grow up and they're going to think that we're our own place. We're going to think that we're our own government. We want them to be connected. We want them to know that they're also part of the Mishkan of Shiloh. So you know what we're going to do? We create this Mizbeach simply right now as an aid, as a testimony to the fact that all of our children who walk to the riverbank will see this Mizbeach and say, wow, what is that? And we'll explain to them, yes, that's our connector. That is to our sign to show that you need to go to the Transjordan, to the West Bank, in order to be part of this kingdom. So in fact, it was exactly for this reason that Israel was concerned about that they actually created this Mizbeach in the first place. Pinchas listens carefully, accepts their intentions, returns with their message to all of Israel, and everybody is pleased. And this is the end of the crisis. The crisis is narrowly averted because of this conversation and this diplomacy. Two very fascinating things to think about as we consider this really remarkable story. Number one is you see something interesting over here, that even when the way that Yehoshua dispatches the East Bank tribes, it's B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, those are the primaries, and then he also sends Chatzi Shevet Menashe, half of the tribe of Menashe. If we go back to the Torah itself, when this whole discussion happens, and there's this whole discussion between Moshe Rabbeinu and these tribes, it's interesting to note that the half of a tribe, Menashe, was not negotiating for the East Bank land. It was only two tribes, Reuven and Gad. Menashe was actually what Moshe inserted into the equation. Why did Moshe insert another tribe? Meaning, Menashe wasn't asking to be split up in the end of the day. Why is it? Why did Yehoshua give them special treatment when sending them back and dividing them up? So once, a while back, I was in Yeshivat Har Etzion in Gush, And Rav Gigi was speaking before Mincha, and he said the following theory, which is a very fascinating theory, and that is that Menashe we know to be a tribe which is very connected to the land of Israel. It is from the tribe of Menashe that we have Benos Tzolofchad, the daughters of Tzolofchad, who come and request that they really want a division of the land of Israel. They're adherent to the land of Israel. They care about it deeply. So Moshe Rabbeinu is concerned about this exact secession problem. He's worried that these states are going to secede from the union. So what does he do? He takes one tribe which cares very much about the union, and he splits that tribe in half to be a bridge tribe between the east and the west. And they're going to be the ones that connect both the tribes on the far side and the near side. That is Moshe Rabbeinu's hope, to try to defray this very problem itself, to create one federal government over all of these states. And the last thing we see here is something which really should be an eye-opener. The last time we saw Pinchas was in a very particular case. Pinchas took advantage of when there was a plague which was spreading among Israel. When in Parshas, or the end of Parshas Balak and Parshas Pinchas, where there was a plague spreading because Bnei Israel were following the daughters of Midian and serving Avodah Zorah and adulterating. And at this point in time, Pinchas took charge, went and killed Zimri in an act of zealotry, killed Zimri and Cosby, thereby stopping the plague. And he created peace and the plague stopped and most people were happy. Now it's interesting to note, when we look at Pinchas and we say, what kind of person was Pinchas? We all kind of in the back of our mind think, yeah, you know, Pinchas is that kind of, you know, trigger happy Bible gun kind of guy, you know, who walks around looking for opportunities to exert himself, and this was give him any excuse and he'll pull that trigger. That's kind of, you know, you think, oh well, he did it right because he found the right opportunity to use his weapon. And what Tanakh is saying is, when you read it in a longitudinal perspective, it's absolutely not the case. If you think about what Pinchas did over here, here is the man who, in this particular case, in order to create peace, was the one who was the diplomat. The Pinchas, in certain cases, realized you need zealotry to create peace, and in certain cases, you need diplomacy to create peace. Sometimes you need to fight, sometimes you need to kill, but sometimes you need to be able to speak and hear to affect peace. And this gives us a greater sense of what Pinchas and who he really is. Pinchas is a person not concerned about his own ideas, his own values. What Pinchas is concerned about is God's values, and God's values call for subtlety, sometimes diplomacy, and sometimes zealotry. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.